We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
We have leads and lose leads. That's over the course of time. We do have to nip this in the bud. We got to get it back right. I do anticipate our guys will. I mean, there's a lot of good names down there. And like I said, Sheck was really good, and so was Chatwood today. Monty's the one that struggled. I mean, otherwise, the bullpen actually pitched pretty good. They did. So it was just one guy that had a tough time. And, of course, Stropia didn't get through it, but that happened rather quickly. But Monty's the guy there that was a difference maker.
Middays on the Score.
I quibble with that a little bit. It's looked worse than he made it sound, I think.
That's all fine.
That's Joe Madden. Bernstein and McKnight, Sports Radio 670 The Score. Sahadev Sharma time now. He is on Twitter at Sahadev Sharma. He covers the Cubs for The Athletic, and he joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Sahadev, I don't know how to respond. I'm supposed to not do my usual thing of saying, hey, it's baseball, it's early, teams have bad weeks, teams have good weeks, teams have bad two-week stretches, but Theo from Elmwood Park has instructed us that we need urgency. So what do we do? How do we compartmentalize this?
No, I think, you can't overreact to every situation and you can't panic to every bad situation, but yeah, you can't also dismiss it and say it doesn't matter, it's two losses in April, because they're two losses that should have been wins, that the bullpen blew, the starting pitching obviously wasn't great either in either of those two losses. So you can't dismiss them. I think that's the thing, that's the most important thing. Don't just say, who cares, they don't matter, it's April losses, let's move on. Because especially when we all had concerns about the bullpen coming into the season, and then what happens? The bullpen looks terrible in that first series and costs the team two wins. They should be 3-0 right now if they, can just get a couple key outs here and there. And when those things don't happen, panic does start to set in a little bit, and people get a little bit worried, and you don't want that to seep into the team. Sorry, but I think that's the biggest thing. You don't want this to kind of snowball and become one of those Aprils where, oh man, if it wasn't for the bullpen, we'd be talking about a team that's far and away in first place. We've seen seasons sunk by that. Numerous teams, great teams that have the offense, the starting pitching comes together, and the bullpen just can't keep it together.
Pedro Strop ready to throw a 25 pitch outing? I mean, is he ready to put up the kind of fight in a late close game that the Cubs need him to be without Brandon Morrow right now?
I think so. I mean, he looked really good his initial outing, if I'm remembering correctly. It's all those last few games were so long, it's starting to blend together. But I believe he came in that first game and was fine. I don't think. Strope's the type of guy that I worry about. He's just been so consistent for so long that I just kind of chalk it up to he does throw wild pitches. He spikes sliders every once in a while. I didn't get to see a replay, but there were some people in my mentions questioning how hard Wilson went after that ball, whether he should have blocked it. I didn't see it, so I'm not sure how much Lane Wilson gets there, but it's also something that Strope does. He will throw a wild pitch here and there, and it kind of felt like that was the apropos ending, the way the bullpen had performed up to that point in that game. So he's not a guy I'm concerned with. Honestly, if you really break it down, the bullpen was what, Montgomery, Chatwood, Strope are the guys that didn't do that well over the weekend. I'm probably missing one name there. And you know what? Cishek looked great. Brock looked fine. Rosario looked fine. There were names that looked good that performed. So it's kind of half and half here, and you just have to hope that the half that goes in another direction is the half that's been bad so far.
So out of, I guess the name that you might have missed is Tyler Chatwood. I mean, if we're keeping score, I guess. And as we try to count for Joe Madden's sense of urgency, I guess a question about the bullpen needs to be, how often can you work Tyler Chatwood and still claim that you're being urgent?
Yeah, no, I think the question about sense of urgency, when you talk about that, I start to look at the bullpen and say, did they come out of camp with the best relievers? Now, it's really hard to do that when you have guaranteed contracts and you can't just release everyone. They bit the bullet with Brian Dunsing. They can't do that with everyone, not right away. I understand trying to see if you can get some value out of these guys. And Chatwood looked okay in that first inning. Even with that home run, I was like, hey, three ground balls. Yeah. That's great. You know, that's exactly what Chatwood's supposed to do. He left one up and he drilled it. And, of course, it was Jeff Mathis. But, you know, it's a... I'm not going to say you can't go to Chatwood ever. I'm not sure if you should be going to him in any situation where a game is reachable right now. Unfortunately, there may be a couple guys like that in the bullpen at the moment. So you got to figure out how you're going to work this. You're going to have to put some guys that you may not be comfortable with in those situations. But you know, if we're going to criticize the ownership for not spending, I think partly Theo deserves some criticism for what he spent last offseason, keeping them from bringing the best relievers up right now. Alan Webster should probably be on this team right now. Dylan Maples should probably be on this team right now. There are guys that should be on this team. Kyle Ryan is really impressed in spring training. He's not a guy that's going to miss bats, but he will get a ton of weak contact. Perhaps they don't have the best pitchers up that are in their organization. We're going to see all these guys. We're going to see a lot of different guys throughout the season. When that happens, how urgent they are going to be with those things, that's what we have to see. I really think that's a little bit of a concern right now. You don't want to get sunk in April because of the bullpen. You just don't want to see a dreadful start because of one unit not picking up its weight.
What are the working theories about what's wrong with Yu Darvish?
Honestly, it seems the tack they're taking here is that he was too amped up. His delivery was sped up. He was kind of hyped for that outing, and he just couldn't get his mechanics right, and that led to terrible fastball command. Now, Darvish is someone that always, not always, but if he's going to struggle, it's going to be fastball command. So this isn't some crazy situation. It's like, whoa, what's wrong with this guy's fastball? I mean, throughout his career, even when he's at his best, he will sometimes struggle with fastball command. He can get it back in a game by just leaning on that slider, and at times he did, and honestly at times he looked great, and the fastball was just nowhere close. And then obviously by that third inning he was guiding the fastball. He was down like two or three ticks with velocity, so it was an unacceptable outing. I'm sure everyone will agree with that. But I don't think they're worried about that, because they really are chalking it up to he was too amped and maybe lost a little focus. I think Hotovy said, you know, he was kind of joking around with guys, and maybe you can't be doing that in that situation. And when I say joking around with guys, joking around with the opposition. So I don't know if everyone's going to buy that and say, yeah, that's fine. Let's dismiss that outing and move on and see how he does in Atlanta. Right now, I can't overreact to Darvish, because I saw the stuff was so good in spring. I just want to give him a couple more starts and really see what he can do. But I think the question of how does he handle big situations, big moments, is still one that we're not going to get answered satisfactory for a while.
Yeah, you're right, Zahadov, and I'm with you. I'm actually a little bit more positive about Darvish's start because of the swing and miss stuff he had. Still, though, after a whole weekend where your offense shows up and delivers big-time hits, Anthony Rizzo with home runs, Javi Baez with two of them, I mean, that's an offense that did exactly what it needed to do. Does anybody look around and say, what the hell at this point? Or is this a clubhouse that's as put together as anybody else?
No, I mean, that's what you're barring against, right? That's what you're trying to fight against. That's what you're making sure doesn't happen. That's why you have to get this bullpen in line. I think that's kind of what Joe was saying in that quote to start this interview. You cannot let it get out of hand. You cannot let the bullpen losses, when bullpens blow games consistently, it is the most demoralizing thing. I mean, just think about it. When fans watch it, how you feel when a bullpen blows a game.
Like
you
death.
Had a win, and then it's taken away from you by, you know, one poor inning, one bad pitch, and that's how that's how you sink a season. That's how you really crush the spirit of a team, if that happens over and over and over again. I mean, I know the Cleveland Indians went through that for the first few months last year, and they were lucky enough to play in a division where nobody else was competing, so it didn't cost them. But these are things that just, they eat. When the offense is playing like that, when you see the offense, they kept fighting back. That was a great performance by the offense yesterday, and nobody's talking about the offense right now. Because of what the bullpen did. So that's why you have to make sure it gets nipped in the bud and it doesn't continue on, because eventually frustration will seep in. No matter how tight the clubhouse is, no matter all the good vibes that you have there, eventually if people get frustrated. So you have to guard against that. I don't think that's something that's going to happen three games in. I'd be shocked. If it is, then there's much bigger problems than just the bullpen. Because if there's infighting after just two bad losses, that's a big problem. And I do not expect that with this group. So the offense, I think you should come away saying that was a great performance by the offense. Be thrilled that the offense is clicking as expected, as many expected. A lot of guys up and down the lineup look great. I mean, how about Daniel Descalso coming up with really big hits yesterday and driving the ball? I mean, everybody up and down the lineup was really impressive, and we're just not going to focus on it or talk about it much because of that bullpen, and we shouldn't. The bullpen is an issue, and it's costing them wins, and this team should be much better. Just one or two slight tweaks in that bullpen, and maybe it fixes things, but right now it's a concern.
A couple of defensive points. Did you think that Ben Zobrist could have taken a better route or could have had a better chance at that ball that got away from him? And are you at all troubled by some erratic throws early from Javier Baez?
Yeah, I heard you guys talking about the Baez stuff. I remember one or two, and you know what, I kind of see them throughout the season, and you know what, he gets settled in. He's the type that when he does notice something is off with him, he works at it and he quickly rectifies the issue. I don't worry about Javi that much because as laid back as he may seem, he's constantly working and he's very aware of what may be going wrong, and he'll adjust. He'll fix whatever is up with him if the throws are consistently off. The Zobrist in left field, yeah, I agree. I thought that went off the wall at first. I was trying to figure out what happened. I thought it bounced out of his glove, and then watching the replay, it looked like he should have maybe even had a chance to camp under it. I don't know. You know, it was obviously not ideal. And he's never going to be a great defender. He's going to take some bad routes in the outfield. So, yeah, I guess you kind of throw your hands up on that one. Not great defense there, but overall I thought the defense was solid. Nothing stood out to me as spectacular, and nothing stood out to me outside of that one play. I do agree, probably could have taken a better route, but nothing was just like a glaring issue with the defense for me.
What should we do? What should Cubs fans keep in mind over the course of the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, all the way up until the MLB draft, Craig Kimbrell's name continues to come up as he's a free agent?
Yeah, I mean, unless there's a change in philosophy with the ownership and suddenly the budget is not as restrictive as they're making it seem, they're just not going to spend the money on him right now. After the draft, when draft day compensation isn't tied to it and maybe his ask comes way down, yeah, maybe he's looked at as the deadline move, because they always keep that cushion of money to add at the deadline. They're going to be able to add if they're in contention. So Cubs fans shouldn't worry about that too much. So if it gets to that point, he's still available and they believe he's in shape and he's the best add that they can make to that bullpen, and the bullpen's still an issue, then yeah, maybe they're the ones that go out and get him. But it's just not going to happen right now unless there's a drastic change. And I haven't heard anything about it. So I'd be very surprised if suddenly they decide they're spending more money when they could have done that all offseason. I mean, we talked about this all winter. There's no reason not to go out and get a high leverage reliever. They needed it. They needed to go out and do that, and they just didn't because of the budget. They were told they couldn't, you know, everyone focused on 10-year, $300 million, $400 million deals. That wasn't the issue. Don't give them the out of saying we can't, put that around our necks right now and carry that big contract. We have to be budget conscious. No, it's about a 2 or 3 year deal for someone like Zach Britton or Adam Ottavino or Andrew Miller. That's where you criticize ownership. It just doesn't make any sense. You're in the middle of contention. You have a clear window of contention and obvious issues that everyone agrees isn't where you want it to be. And they didn't go out and fix it. And now it's three games in, it's an issue. We'll see where they are a week from now, 2 weeks from now. But it was something that everyone saw. So it's really hard to feel like, how could you have predicted this? How could you have known? What could they have done?
It's amazing how many texters are reacting. Boy, you guys are panicking. Boy, you guys have become the Boston press. This is some serious panic. But I just want people to understand, I don't want to react like this. I don't want – I am the last person to do this. And I hate the position that I'm in because of the Cubs demanding urgency from their team and from everybody else and taking every game seriously. And October starts in April or March. That means it's now November. I've never done this before, Sahadev. I've never tried to look at a baseball season like this, and I'm just not comfortable doing it.
Yeah, I agree. It's anathema to me. I don't like reacting to three games like this. What I keep coming back to is, you know, the reason I'm not hounding on the starting pitching and I'm focusing on the bullpen is because that was, like I said, that's the issue that we had coming in. And we all said this is going to be an issue, or has the potential to be a big issue. And right now it looks like it is. So you have to wonder, okay, how right or wrong were we about that? How quickly can they fix this? It's not that, oh no, the season is over. They cannot fix this. This can't change. Of course it can. We've seen relievers. It's been one or two outings for everyone. Nobody has had more than two outings. You can't just say that, oh, this guy's terrible this season. I mean, do we really think Strope's going to be bad or Mike Montgomery is not going to figure it out all year long? I mean, weird things happen and guys have bad seasons that are normally good. But I'm not saying that those guys are done or that they can't fix it or be much better. And that's the positive you can take away from this. The two of the guys that struggled, and maybe Montgomery was the one that struggled the most, we trust to come back and have strong seasons. So there are a lot of guys in this bullpen. You know, you can take a positive away from how good Brad Brock looked, how good Cishek looked, that Brandon Kinsler threw a shutout inning and got a ground ball in the exact situation that he's supposed to do that, why he was brought in last year. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are little positives you can take away and say, let's hope that trend continues, and let's hope this Mike Montgomery and Pedro Strop throwing a wild pitch, those trends don't continue, and that Chatwood is only used in pop-up situations, or that he's used in a fashion and that builds up his confidence, and he can be used in more, you know, high leverage situations if need be. And don't forget that there are reinforcements in AAA. Even if they're not going to go out and get Craig Kimbrell, there are guys like Dakota Mekas, Dylan Maples, Alan Webster. All these guys have the chance to impact the team. And there are other names too. I mean, you know, Brandon Moore is eventually going to come back. Tony Barnett, Xavier Cedeño. These are all competent relievers, some much better than competent. So let's obviously be patient. Let's obviously wait and see. But yes, let's also point out that this was an issue coming into the season. It's reared its head immediately, and they cannot continue to drop games that were clear wins.
Saad, real quick before you go, you wouldn't know it to listen to any of the three of us, but there was some fun had over the weekend. Randy Rosario catches the home run mm-hmm. in the hat, but I don't know if you noticed this. No one else in the bullpen moved either. So are we still doing the thing in bullpens in play where those guys, relievers, aren't moving at all? Because as the bullpen went under the seats in Wrigley, we lost that aspect of Cubs
That's
bullpen.
A great point.
Do we know that yet? Can you confirm any of this?
Well, last night's clubhouse wasn't the ideal time to ask.
Hey, I got a question for you. Let me just ask something.
Sort of leave.
So we'll try and get an answer for that soon. I'm not heading to Atlanta. Patrick will be there, but I'll definitely try and get that in Milwaukee or back home.
Thanks, man. Love
Thanks
you.
As always.
Of course. Take care.
That is Sahadev Sharma on the Cubs.
We have the
midday midway coming up. I have a really weird requirement from an employer that is leading to a completely appropriate lawsuit. I would have done the same thing. I also have a couple of fish stories. One that is absolutely not to be believed on the high seas.
Robots are taking more jobs, and I've done my best to find the worst April Fool's jokes of the morning. The midday midway's on the way. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
First half of the show, we're kind of freaking out about the Cubs because they kind of told us we're supposed to take everything really seriously and be urgent about everything. And I can't. Freaking out. I don't know what to do.
There's some panicking. I think we've brought ourselves back from general panic. Right?
We have?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Well, at least we've brought ourselves back from acute panic. That's for sure. If you want to rest in general panic, I can't rescue you from there. But it's still three games of baseball. And even though it felt bad, they've got more games. That's promise you, they have more games to play.
A threat. The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Wolves aren't fooling around. With only four home games remaining, the Chicago Wolves are once again looking to defend the division title. Celebrate this anniversary season with free parking courtesy of Kia. For ticket info, visit ChicagoWolves.com.
This news from Tokyo, it's in the New York Post, but they've got a dateline, says Tokyo. It can't dribble, let alone slam dunk, yet Toyota's basketball robot hardly ever misses a free throw or three-pointer. We have more robots taking jobs. It might help Duke some shoot from the outside. The 207-centimeter, that's a 6-foot-10-inch tall machine, made 5 of 8 three-point shooters in a demonstration in a Tokyo suburb Monday. A ratio says engineers is worse than usual. It's a better three-point shooter than that. Toyota Motor Corp's robot called Q3 computes as a three-dimensional image where the basket is, using sensors on its torso, and adjusts its motors inside its arm and knees to give the shot the right angle and propulsion for a swish. There's a video. And lest you think that this is a robot that's just, you know, like a mechanical arm or something with, you know, this is a human-looking thing. It actually kind of looks a little bit like, did you see Days of Future Past, the X-Men movie with both McAvoy and Stewart and McKellen and Fassbender?
I did not.
Actually, fairly decent flick. The next one after that, the Apocalypse one, not so good. But it looks like the Sentinels, kind of, from Days of Future Past. It's got a weird, kind of scary, erase humanity from existence kind of vibe
to it. That's
scary. Yeah, a little bit of that.
Yeah, a little bit.
But it's also
that.
A stone-cold three-point shooter. And apparently, the last year's version was just designed to hit free throws. This one, you can move around the court some and hit three-pointers. So very soon, we will have Steph Curry range on these humanity-erasing robots. Robots are taking our jobs.
You've seen the fish guy?
The fish guy? Like Trey Anastasio?
No.
Not that guy.
Of all places, the one thing about when the Mississippi River floods, it turns Iowa into Mississippi. Because in Davenport, Iowa, there was a guy who was carrying around a 50-pound flathead catfish.
That seems large.
Well, it is. And he noodled it.
Is it legal?
Well, great question, counselor. It is a great question. In some places it is. In some places it is not. And Fish Guy was photographed by, his name is Peter Robinson. And a lot of people photographed him wandering around the streets of Davenport with the catfish that he grabbed with his bare hands. And now the Iowa DNR has seen the photos and they have fined him $93.75 for illegally noodling a fish.
Is that a per pound fine?
I don't know how it works.
Is he charged under $100 because it's not over 50 pounds?
Jeff Harrison, the DNR officer for Scott County, says we received several tip calls, complaints, somebody taking a catfish from the Mississippi Riverfront. So everybody's narking on him. And he apparently called and he gave himself up. He said, I'm the catfish guy. He turned himself in and he met with Harrison. He said, I'd rather do the good thing, the right thing. So he was fined. He was warned to obtain a fishing license within 24 hours. And now I don't know if this was illegal noodling or the fact that the noodling was legal. It's just the catching of the fish without the license.
Do you have to noodle and release?
Or you just need a license and you can catch a fish any way you damn well please? I don't know the answer to that, but it's all's well that ends well. He has paid the fine and now he understands.
Thought this story was pretty funny. On the eve of opening day, one Blue Jays fan encountered a pleasant surprise while out on a snack run. Brendan Panikkar and his girlfriend Sarah Ranby stopped by Shoppers Drug Mart in Toronto on Wednesday night to buy some snacks when he noticed some news on his phone. Panikkar saw a report about Blue Jays designated hitter Kendrys Morales being traded to the A's and quickly called out to his girlfriend in the store, hey, Sarah, Kendrys Morales is going, you know, he's being traded. We're getting Joe Biagini. Here's the thing. Blue Jays reliever Joe Biagini, you know, the guy that was losing his job and being traded, he was in the store. So he hears Panikkar say it. The guy was like, whoa, what happened? What's the news? Who got traded? I didn't look up because I'm still looking at it to make sure the report was legit, Pandekar said. I go over. I show him the phone. I go, oh, my God, you're Joe Biagini. You're being traded. They took the selfie in the Shoppers Drug Mart and the whole deal. Biagini is now out. Kendrys Morales is now in. And those two fans and Joe Biagini have a memory and a picture
that's
to share cool. forever.
That's awesome.
I thought it was hilarious.
A lawsuit filed in Perry County Circuit Court in Kentucky makes an unusual allegation. A former employee of the Hampton Inn claims that he was discriminated against for refusing an exorcism.
Wait.
Jason Fields filed the suit against his former manager, Sharon Linden, on the grounds of religious discrimination. According to court documents, Fields said the bizarre situation started when Linden found out he was getting a divorce. And the suit states that Linden told Fields that his marital problems were being caused by demons.
Wow.
And stated that if he wanted to continue to work for her, he would need to be cleansed. So cleansing, she explained, was like an exorcism. She had been on the receiving end of the practice 3 or 4 times.
She says she'd had 3 or 4 exorcisms.
Well, because the first one doesn't take. You know,
it's no
the
good.
The demons come back. You know, it's a problem that way. So at one point, the plaintiff claims members of Linden's church showed up in the lobby during his shift to pray for him. Linden provided a questionnaire to Fields to fill out about his romantic and sexual history, complete with a question on whether or not he had made a pact with Satan. Fields did not turn the form.
No, not a pact. When we talk
over to Linden,
I would call it a pact.
He eventually quit his job, and the suit is seeking a jury trial and named Linden as well as the Hampton Inn. This is what you call a case.
Oh yeah, he's got something there.
I think he's got something.
So wait, this isn't the church. This isn't like the Roman Catholic Church.
No,
exorcism.
This is some weird.
This is
little
some
cultish
weird.
Thing.
Yeah, because you can't. I mean, they take the exorcism thing very seriously.
Uh-huh.
The Roman Catholic Church. I mean, it's got under scrutiny.
No, the
There's
actual
a whole
Roman
of...
ritual, it needs multiple levels of approval
oh,
to
absolutely.
Be involved.
Because they've realized now that mental health issues were often diagnosed as demons back in the olden times and then tried to be exorcised with the power of Christ and it doing the compelling of you and the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, though, I think they've got like a more lockdown philosophy on who needs and who doesn't need an exorcism. 3 or 4?
Yeah, see, the cleansings don't take.
So I've done my best to accumulate as many of the well-intentioned April Fool's jokes that have been going around on Twitter this morning. One includes your locals. This one I thought was funny. The U.S. Open tweeted, they say they're going to allow puppies to be on the ball person team in 2019. You're going to get puppies, which actually might not be a terrible idea. The Buccaneers tweeted that Mike Evans is going to play this next season as both a wide receiver and a cornerback. Funny. But the locals have two that are actually fairly decent initiatives for an April Fool's joke. We would play it if it worked. It doesn't quite translate, but the Cubs have come out with a cologne ad for Dirt, Leather, and Ivy.
Yeah, expensive
and it's just,
colognes, yeah.
It's, you know, it's just a black and white shot of Rizzo and Hamels, and I think Javi's on one, I think Amora's in another, and they're just, you know, kind of doing this sensuous thing with their gloves and with Ivy. There's one where, like, Ivy pops out of Pedro Strop's glove, and he's sniffing it, and this is the cologne for the season and all thing. Well done. That's an effort. But have you seen how the Bears have marketed their new jerseys? They're going to put the numeral 1 in front of each number.
Because of the 100-year
Because of the 100-year anniversary. And there's a video. You can go wild, retweet it. It's Mitch Trubisky and George McCaskey just kind of deadpanning this whole idea of the Bears wearing triple-digit numbers to commemorate their 100th year as you're celebrating their centennial. It's not bad. It's pretty funny. It makes you think, my God, they might actually do this. They might be so proud of the 100 years, they might actually put this on the jerseys all season long.
And apparently already some people have been duped into thinking it was real and were responding.
What kind of people would think that's real?
That's exactly right.
I can't imagine that.
It's a shark eat shark world, as an Australian fisherman discovered this week. This from CNN. Stay with me here.
Okay.
While fishing for a small shark off the coast of New South Wales, Tropman Bermagui, also known as Jason, hooked a bronze whaler shark.
It's a lovely name.
A bronze whaler shark, a decent-sized shark. It was promptly eaten by a colossal mako. But before the huge shark could be hauled in, it fell prey to an even bigger creature, which devoured all but the mako shark's head.
No!
Now, that's just the head of the giant mako. That is all that is left.
It's like Russian nesting dolls, but they're sharks.
All that is left. Jason said, "We didn't see what ate the mako. We didn't see what ate the mako." Estimating the intact shark would have weighed at least 550 pounds. The head alone weighed 220 pounds. The head, the remaining head, was 220 pounds.
Oh, my God.
When the crew cut the meat from the mako's head, they found another surprise. The detached bill of a marlin embedded into the flesh, which they speculated was the result of a battle years ago. The find highlighted the amazing healing powers of the shark. So looking at the size of the shark and the bite taken out of it, it's tempting to speculate that the mighty mako fell victim to some gargantuan ocean predator better suited to a Hollywood disaster movie. People were speculating about, like, a lost megalodon shark.
Yeah, it could be Sharknado.
Well, megalodon was like the size of a school bus.
And I think Jason Statham fought a megalodon in a movie not long ago.
That actually at one point did exist, but now they actually think it's a large tiger shark. Because there's so many around at the moment. They grow up to 10 to 16 feet long, weigh between 800 and 1,500 pounds. And they say the mako was unusually vulnerable because it was caught on the hook, because the struggles are likely to attract sharks and other predators. Mm-hmm. They say also orcas, killer whales,
yeah,
will attack large sharks to eat their livers.
The nice bottle of Chianti.
Yes, like they've got a plan. It says, but the bite marks look like that of a shark, so it's probably a white shark, they think. So it's a dispute. And we know that the teeth of the tiger shark are unique in that they are more, they're smaller, they're thicker, they're more serrated. And that is because tiger sharks have adapted to eat sea turtles.
No kidding.
What?
A favorite prey of the tiger shark is the sea turtle. But they haven't decided which, but that is a very Australia story. A 220-pound fish head left there for Barnes & Barnes with the marlin bill buried in it from years ago.
You know, we've been doing this for a little over a year now, and I've come to a conclusion. And the Midday Midway has done this for me. I'm done with the ocean. I don't think I'm going in there ever again. If I can't see my feet in a body of water, I'm good. Yeah, I'm good.
But even if you
can. We just read too many stories. But at least that way I can enjoy the shores here, the wonderful country, and see, you know, what the ocean has. But there's death machines everywhere in the ocean.
There's things
everywhere.
You can step on that will kill you in 30 seconds.
There's
the blue-ringed octopus. There's stonefish. There's scorpion fish.
There's the thing that some woman picked up, a blue-ringed octopus,
yes,
like the other day, and we read the story, and she didn't die. Like, it was a celebration that she didn't die picking up this cute little gelatinous thing.
That has been the Midday Midway, brought to you by Door Systems. Call 1-800-THE-DOOR.
Easy number to remember. 1-800-THE-DOOR.
We still have a qualifying spot for the final event for Cubs season tickets. April 4th. We'll be there at 1-2 Pru, presented by Sweetwater Tavern and Grill, newly remodeled and reopened the Mag Mile, and Redemption Rye and Bourbon Whiskey.
I think you and I both caught a ton of excitement from the NCAA tournament. I think it swept everybody, and we had a payoff of sorts. Because we didn't have a Cinderella crashing the dance this year. We didn't have a couple of teams knocking out twos and threes this season, not like we had in the last couple of tournaments. And it resulted in some damn good basketball from some damn good college teams.
And there's some
thoroughly enjoyed.
Damn scummy coaches involved. And you know what? Who cares anymore? Who can really? How can you really hold yourself in this sort of high dudgeon over some sort of recruiting violations?
Oh, they'll find a way.
And all that. I'm incapable of that.
All right. If you're willing to give coaches a pass for that, I've got a coach that needs some accountability heaped on him. We'll get to the tournament next. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
And it's over! Anything can happen in March. For the first time, Auburn is going to the Final Four. It's a trip to Minneapolis for the Tigers. heartbreak for Kentucky.
I knew this group wanted to make history. I knew they wanted to play good basketball. And I knew they wanted to represent Auburn.
All right. Well, that's, first of all, Ian Eagle is just awesome. And I think he's done now because now it's the boring crew instead of the really good crew. Ian Eagle and Jim Sparkle, they're the best crew going.
Quick, deploy the boring crew.
They really, no, they're the best. They do the best work of any of the broadcast crews. They've worked together forever.
Yeah, that's
true. And Sparkle really knows basketball, and they're just so comfortable and so much fun. And Ian is just, he's just great. And now it's going to be all a little more grandiose. And it, well, it's also the raftery stuff. And it's fine.
I don't mind that yet. Maybe that's just because I haven't, you know, it's there's a childhood aspect to it.
Sure,
you know, that's a voice from when I was a kid.
I think he's
it's
fine.
Not kind of the same for.
But I don't know. I don't know exactly what Grant Hill provides. He's also fine. It's all fine. But I
yeah,
like
there's nothing
it.
Egregious in that. There's nothing necessarily wrong with it. I get, though, that you want the more exciting crew. I think they've had some pretty great broadcasts. We've had some pretty great games. I mean, the finish of those three out of those four games, the teams that led at halftime ended up losing. I mean, they were all of us. Auburn made a 10-point deficit just disappear coming out of the break. That was incredible to watch them hit three-pointers the way they did in the SEC title game, the way they have kind of all year long. That's a fun damn team to watch.
So are you mad at Bruce Pearl? Is it?
No, I'm mad at Coach K. I'm really mad at Coach K. There is Zion did something for me, and it was pretty easily done. I mean, moments after he stepped onto the court with Duke this season, I stopped hating Duke for the entirety of the year. I wanted them to get it together while he was out. I wanted them to come together as a team and understand what it was like to have him on the bench in case he got into foul trouble or something like that as the tournament wore on. That didn't really happen for him because he played every single minute, it felt like. But I wanted to watch more Duke, and I really kind of spent most of the tournament, most of the season, taking all of the feelings that I have toward Coach K and putting them aside and just kind of rooting for that team as it existed. And rooting for Zion to be the number one pick, that's going to happen anyway. And it was a weird feeling to have. But the graphic that either the Ford Letter Network or CBS or everybody has put this graphic up, right? And it's the shots, the offers for Duke in the last 2 minutes of like every single one of their games, right? Of every single one, and this one too. It's like Zion's 0 for 1, Reddish is 0 for 1, and the guy who's taking the most shots, RJ Barrett, is 0 for 9. They just didn't make shots late. And that's been offered, that graphic is put up as like a, I don't know, an excuse or like, oh, here's how they lost it. The big star freshman couldn't make buckets down the stretch late. But the fact of it is, like, Zion's 0 for 1? 1? Got one
yeah, sometimes
shot. And then again, like you've said, kind of all tournament long, Coach K forgets who to get the ball to in certain spots.
Even though he's a big, he is a unique and special enough talent that you got to treat him like a guard.
They were down three against UCF. Had to, for whatever reason, the ball ends up in his hands on the wing. Down three, he can't shoot threes. He still gets a three-point play. Granted, he misses the free throw, and RJ Barrett does him a solid by cleaning that thing up and putting the bucket back in. But they went to him down three when he's one of the more unlikely guys to get you three in that way. He can't shoot it from beyond. It's not happening. Still, he's the kind of talent that's able to provide that for you.
317 texter says, Bruce Pearl is scum, always will be. You know what? I guess I don't think that cheating a corrupt system is as scummy as I used to think it was. I mean, if you think he plays fast and loose with the rules of NCAA basketball, no question. But who cares? Why do you care? Why do you care?
It's like the Michael Avenatti thing that we were tracking the other day. I mean, he thinks he's got all this stuff, or maybe he does, about shoe companies paying go-betweens to get players to go to schools.
So what?
And everybody goes, yeah, I knew that. Like, I watched Blue Chips. I saw Nolte do it. Like, we all understand that this is the atmosphere of college basketball. This is the reality of
it. What's worse? Let me ask you this. What's worse? Bruce Pearl with his bags of money and the wiretaps and the ratting out other coaches and all the stuff that goes on just because the NCAA's free labor cartel has made some things unethical or quote-unquote illegal. What's worse, that or Tom Izzo's lukewarm, insufficient response to a wave of sexual assaults that involved his program and involved the Michigan State team doctor, who he wasn't even sure was the right guy in the whole thing.
Yeah, that's not great.
What's worse?
But remember, he gets criticized for that because he is such a large outsized source of power at Michigan State's campus in East Lansing. You know, so his response, while kind of gross, doesn't necessarily mean anything in terms of how Michigan State should have handled the Larry Nassar situation, should have handled, and how the USOC should have handled that.
What's worse, Bruce Pearl's recruiting violations or Mike Krzyzewski voicing his full-throated support for Joe Paterno?
Yeah, that's not great.
You know what I mean?
I was thinking of the Paterno stuff. You know, that seems worse than what Bruce Pearl's been up to. The Steve Alford stuff seems worse.
Way worse.
Than the stuff Bruce Pearl's.
Way worse.
But I think what gets Bruce Pearl caught up in a lot of people's hatred and indignation is the lying about it, is the used car salesman aspect of it, right?
I mean, the whole thing of the barbecue he wasn't allowed to have, and the thing, yeah.
When you see it, when you see that, you know that you're supposed to be offended by it. You know that, like, that trope has been given to you. You've seen that in movies, and you've seen that played out in court, and you've seen that played out in SVU specials and stuff. Like, that's the guy that you're not supposed to, like, he probably did it at the end of the show. But what do you do?
What's more offensive? What is more offensive? The Bruce Pearl illegal barbecue and lying to NCAA investigators, or the fact that Tony Bennett has $500,000 worth of bonuses for reaching the Final Four, $250,000 for reaching Elite Eight,
yep,
another $250,000 for reaching the Final Four, and the players get zero?
I've got it at $1 million between the four coaches in the Final Four, right? It's $1 million total?
Right. So you see that, and you actually think, oh, what's wrong with these people? I mean, you can't – I've lost the capacity to feel that way anymore. The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. The Wolves aren't fooling around. With only four home games remaining, the Chicago Wolves are once again looking to defend the division title. Celebrate this anniversary season with free parking courtesy of Kia. For ticket info, visit ChicagoWolves.com. I'm amazed at how many people are agreeing with me about the broadcast crews, about even though that, you know, Nance has all the supposed gravitas and power within the company. I just think Ian Eagle's better. I think he is their best actual doer of the job.
I think he does a hell of a basketball game. I'd still like Nance on my Masters coverage.
Oh, that's
I still like Nance for that,
sure,
because he feels that way. It's more apt to the broadcast, to the sport itself.
And also, we're trying to not panic about the Cubs, even though we're kind of being told we're supposed to panic about
the Cubs. I'm telling you, not panic.
This
don't
is
panic
gonna be a
right
season-long
now.
Battle to figure out what urgency level is supposed to mean in all this. And we also have Brian Hamilton, who's going to join us in just a bit from The Athletic to give us his college basketball thoughts. And we are still waiting to qualify one more potential winner of Cubs season tickets. You have to be listening if you want to win. Don't go anywhere. You got the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.